Hi, I'm Kathy Forstie, music director at Casey Cafe Radio. We're very happy to be chatting with Chris Teffner. His music has been all over the radio the last year in a couple of incarnations, one with his duo C.T. Swan and the other as C.J. Teffner and his single with Kathy Crotty Williams, their hit song, Find the Magic. Chris's music has been described as quirky indie pop and is always filled with catchy melodies and memorable lyrics. Thanks so much, Chris Teffner, for taking the time to talk with me on Casey Cafe Radio.
Good morning, Kathy. How are you?
I'm doing good. I want to start talking about the single you've made with Kathy Crotty Williams called Find the Magic. How did you start working with her?
You know, it's kind of a funny little story. It was through a local bass player, and we'd been talking, you know, about doing something. And he was like, oh, yeah, I should just come check out my band. And, you know, I went to see him one night, and that's where I met Kathy. I heard her sing, and I was like, wow, that voice.
Yeah, she's great. I know you work a lot with female musicians. Is that what you prefer to work with?
I do. It seems to be my MO. I don't know why. I'm just more comfortable with it. And, you know, my writing and the lyrics and the melody, I don't know. It's just, it seems to suit female vocals better than males.
The EP you released with her is called The Cat's Meow.
It is.
Are you guys doing more releases from that EP?
We're probably going to do another release from that EP, and it would probably be another song called Behind Us, which is, it's a different sounding song than Find the Magic, the single that you're playing. But yeah, it's another one with Kathy.
So if someone were to ask you to describe the songs on the EP, what would you say?
Boy, it's, I have a, you know, that's the hardest question ever. I would say, you know, it's the hardest one. I would say that it is, it's definitely, you know, not pop as in, you know, Taylor Swift pop, but, you know, a little more adult oriented. I don't know if that's a thing. Or album oriented rock, like we said back in the olden days. But it is pop because it has, you know, catchy melodies and it's upbeat and it's fun. And it's a little quirky, but I have a lot of influences from growing up. So there are hints of classic rock things. There are guitars. There are guitar solos. There are some big production of vocal harmonies and stuff like that. So, I don't know, quirky indie pop with a classic rock touch.
Yeah, I think that's a good description. Who are your major influences or current major influences for you?
You know, my current major influences, I really like this band called The 1974. I think they're really cool because it's what's going on today, but it's very retro sounding. Actually, I really do like Taylor Swift. I really like Pink. Everything that she does, I dig Paramore. You know, it's all seems to be female fronted stuff.
Mm-hmm. So is that what you grew up listening to? Were you listening to that stuff as a kid?
No, I'm listening to that stuff now. What I grew up listening to as a kid, because I am a product of the 80s. We listened to whatever was on FM radio. It could have been Foreigner. It could be, well, it wasn't Queen on the radio, but, you know, lots of Journey and Styx and, you know, just whatever's on the radio in the 80s, you know, all the pop stuff too. I mean, you know, you'd be hearing the Bangles and the B-52s and, you know, just mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff.
Go-Go's.
Yes, exactly. I do like the quirky kind of fun stuff like that, but I'm very fond of the big production of mm-hmm. things as well. And that's probably, I've been told a few times, I was working with somebody in the studio as a session guitarist, and the producer turned around and said, he goes, do you listen to a lot of Brian May and Queen growing up? And I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, it was funny.
Yeah. But,
so I am influenced by the big productions.
Yeah. A female artist that I think from the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, that I really admire a lot, that I don't think gets the recognition just she deserves, is Chrissie Hynde. Pretenders.
Oh, yeah. I used to listen to so much Pretenders. That first album with, like, Mystery Achievement. You know that
mm-hmm.
song?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it was so bare bones and raw. But, yes, 100% agreement. She's amazing.
I love her. And the Learning to Crawl album is one of my all-time favorite albums, too.
Yeah, I think that was really that, you know, in terms of popularity, might have been their pinnacle, maybe. But yeah, I mean, she's one of those. You just hear the first note of her voice and you're like, oh, yeah, Chrissie Hynde. Yeah,
exactly. And her lyrics are just so good, too. I mean, she's just is a songwriter herself. It's just the topics she picks and just the way she says things are classic.
Yeah, you know, singer-songwriter, but able to put it in a pop format, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not easy to do.
So you were just talking about being a studio musician. So you're what we call in the industry as a hired gun.
I've done a lot of that, both live and in the studio.
So what kind of music do you typically work on?
You know, I tell people I'm comfortable. Well, what I tell people is if you wanted, you know, like hardcore jazz, or you wanted, you know, real legit hardcore country, I would not be your guy. But if you want rock, hard rock, pop, fusion, anything other than, you know, serious country, because I sometimes don't think country musicians are given their due, because some of those guys and gals are incredible. Mm-hmm. They're just amazing players, and it's not me, so I can't do it. And I was raised listening to a lot of jazz in my preteen years, because that's what my family were, all jazz musicians. So that's, you know, just what I was raised listening to. And I love it, Miles Davis and John Coltrane and all this kind of stuff, but I can't do that stuff. So I just say, this is what I can do and this is what I can't do.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever play in a band, or have you always worked on your own projects?
You know, a lot of, when I was in my early 20s, I had my own hard rock band in New England. And, you know, we played some originals, but a lot of covers, some great players in that band. But a lot of the time I've just, you know, been a sideman, which I'm very happy with that. You know, I did a tremendous amount of subbing work. So one night I might play bass in like a hard rock / metal band in a club, and then the next night I would play guitar with like a wedding function band, you know, with like a big horn section and stuff like that. And then the next night I might, you know, accompany somebody on acoustic guitar. So I got a lot of learning experiences and got to play a lot of styles over the years.
And do you, I'm, you know, I'm a bit of a gearhead, so I'm going to ask.
Cool.
Do you like, what guitars do you like to use for those different styles of music?
I try to tailor the guitars and the amps to what's going on, what's appropriate. You know, if I was playing in a rock band, you know, honestly, I would probably stick with a Les Paul or an Explorer and put it through the usual Marshall setup. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was playing something a little more pop oriented, you know, I'd probably use a cleaner amp like a Fender and I'm a big Telecaster fan. I love the Telecaster. It sounds great in everything. Mm-hmm. So I try to, you know, if you're paying me to play for you, I'm going to, you know, give you what's in context with your band to the best that I can.
Mm-hmm. I work in a music store, too. That's one of my other things I do in life. And I sell a lot of Tellies and Strats. So I'm a big Fender person. So,
yeah, I love, you know, and it's funny. I just recently bought another, you know, American Standard Telecaster. And, you know, because in every studio I've ever worked in, there's always a Tele. And it always sits in the mix pretty much better than anything else. So I just bought another one a couple years ago, and it's like my go-to guitar.
Yeah. It's just amazing the different musical styles that guitar is used in. Because I know Prince, he played a Tele.
All the time.
Yeah. And then you see Brad Paisley playing Teles, you know. So the gamut of the musical styles it is in is really cool.
Yep, both fantastic guitar players, too. And I think, I mean, everybody knows Brad Paisley's amazing. And Prince people know that he's amazing on guitar. But if you're a guitarist and you see Prince play, you're like, wow, he was it.
Right, yeah.
And I listened to a lot of Prince growing up, too.
Yeah, he'll be an influence, I think, forever, so.
I saw Purple Rain 7 times.
Did you really?
I did. I loved that movie. I don't know why. I was so into it. Yeah, I saw it 7 times.
Do you think it was the music or the visuals that got you?
Well, to be honest, I was young, so Apollonia was definitely a draw. But it was the music that really processed the guitar sound. Mm-hmm. And I really dug Morris Day and the Time. He's still out there doing it. He was mm-hmm. in town just 2 months ago, Morris Day and the Time.
Yeah. And Prince worked a lot with women, too, like sort of like you do. So.
Yep. Maybe, so that's... Hey, you know, I'm just gave me a little realization there, Kathy.
Yeah. You're very prolific and you're always working. How long does it usually take you to get in the studio and record something?
Well, I am fortunate enough to have a studio in my house, so I can just walk in and see what happens. It's very funny how I write. I'll sit in my living room at night watching TV, and then during the commercials, I mute it, and I have my iPhone sitting there with the voice memos open, and I'll just play things on classical guitar, and I record all of them. So if I looked at my iPhone right now, there might be, you know, 180 or 90 40-second snips of me playing something on classical guitar. And then I'll go through and I'll listen. I'll be like, ugh, that's terrible. That's junk. That's terrible. Oh, hey, what's that? I forgot all about it. And then, you know, just kind of see what goes from there, what happens.
So it's usually a riff that kind of comes to you that you start a song off on?
Yeah, I tend to play a lot of really arpeggiated chords, you know, picking through the notes in a chord. Mm-hmm. And I do it so much that I have to not do it. So usually I will come up with, you know, a chord progression. Usually it's, honestly, it's just like a verse chorus, and I record it into Pro Tools and I chop it up and move it around. And what I thought was the chorus will end up being the bridge or whatever, but I kind of get it all laid out and then I will write the melody to it and, you know, futz around with that. And the melody kind of ends up dictating what the vibe of the lyrics are for me. That's how I seem to go about it.
And so what influences you to write a lyric? Is it like you said you watch TV a lot? Is it something you see on TV?
No, I mean, I think it's probably the usual artist life experiences and reflection, regret. That's a big one, right? Mm-hmm. That's full of fodder for songwriting is regret and loss. Or at least for me. But yeah, it really is the melody that makes me think of the lyrics. And I do have a great friend and musical partner. His name is Jeff Michaels. He's a fantastic songwriter and pianist. I've produced one of his albums and have worked with him for almost 10 years. So he does co-write some of the lyrics with me. And I will send him my lyrics and say, hey, what do you think of this? And he does a lot of fine tuning and tweaking for me. So mm-hmm. everything on The Cat's Meow, he helped me with a lot of the lyrics on all those four songs.
It's always good to have an editor as a writer.
It really is because he really kind of, I mean, he actually is a published author. So I will send him something and he'll make the edits and suggest words and swap out a word here and there. And then, you know, it's very collaborative because if he swaps out one word, I'll think, oh, now, you know, it kind of sets it up like this and then I'll rewrite it. And yeah, it's, you know, Jeff Michaels, amazing artist.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'll get worried about whether or not I should put an on or an in there, you know. It's like a two-letter word that I'm like, which should it be, you know. So, and then most people wouldn't know the difference if I sang it differently or not, so.
I sometimes wonder about that, you know, just that. I'm like, does this little thing make a difference? But I think the listener is actually much... I'm grasping for the word is, but I think their intuition and grasp of some of the finer details of songs, and it doesn't matter if it's the lyric, the melody, the music, the production, I think listeners are incredibly smart. They mm-hmm. and intuitive. I, you know, a lot of them don't know the tech terms that, you know, you and I know, but they really know. They know what they like, and I think they're very, very savvy. And sometimes I think people in the industry do not give the listener as much credit as they deserve. And that's why we're here, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. We're here because of fans and the music buying public.
Yeah. And people who are relating to your music, you know, that's what you're really looking for is that relatability.
Yeah, you have to, it's all about some kind of connection or evoking some emotion in the listener, you know, whether it's happiness or sadness, or the lyric, you know, makes them think about some time in their life, be it good or bad or joyous or whatever, right? It's always mm-hmm. about making that connection somehow.
Yeah. Find the Magic. Tell me about that song. What was the inspiration for that song?
Well, how it started off and how it ended up are probably 180 degrees apart from each other. You know, it was one of those things. But it was where I had written the music and then the melody. Boy, it's a tough one. I sometimes don't know how these things fall together. But it ended up being the song about, or another song, I should say, about life and learning and growing and looking ahead. Mm-hmm. And originally, we had another title to it, and it escapes me what it is at the moment, but it was actually a different song. It wasn't Magic. It was actually a different word than Magic, and it was a completely different song. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like you were saying, talking about one word, and we ended up with Find the Magic, and it turned into Find the Magic, mm-hmm. turned into a whole other song.
So it's sort of a poppy kind of song. Do you try to always write lyrics that match what the sound of the song looks like? Because I know, I mean, I'm just thinking about songs like Bad Moon Rising. It's actually lyrically a very dark song. But then when you listen to the music, it's kind of a light and poppy kind of sound.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that is funny because it is the subject matter is dark, but they're all major chords, and it's a very mm-hmm. classic rock chord progression. Yeah, that goes back to, you know, kind of what I was saying earlier about the melody dictating what the lyrics end up being. Yeah, it's so tricky when you get into the actual, how did you write things? Because I kind of don't.
It's magic.
It is magic. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. It just kind of, the best things that I do are things that have just come through me, if I mm-hmm. you know what I mean, mm-hmm. if I try to think of something, or, you know, say, oh, I want to write this song, or, you know, I want to like use this progression or something, that never works out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be more organic,
right? Yeah the song kind of dictates what it's going to become, you know.
It really does.
You can't force it to be a certain way. At least that's my experience in songwriting. So,
no, you're right. The song dictates what it is because it's a little person, or it's a little life unto itself, right? It's like a little mm-hmm. microcosm of sorts. And I'm a big fan of, especially in production, but in parts of the song, you know, is this, because I, you know, I sit back and edit myself, and I'm like, is this adding to the song? Is this harmony? Is this word? Is this delay or reverb or something like this? Is this adding to the song? Because I don't believe that there can be like a middle ground in a way. And what I mean is either it's adding to the song or it's subtracting from the song. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think there's any, you know, oh, we can just leave this in because it doesn't hurt, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I don't mm-hmm. know if I clarify myself, but
yeah, that makes sense.
Because if it's not helping, it's hurting,
right? Do you remember the first song you wrote, how old you were and when you wrote it?
Boy, that's a toughie. I think the first real song that I wrote was with a great friend of mine. He was a bass player in my band. I think it was called Cyanide. And we were young, and it was a pretty hard rock thing. I think at the time we'd been listening to a lot of Metallica or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was called Cyanide. It was probably kind of silly, but I think that was probably it. And I think we might have been like 20 years old or something. Mm-hmm. Probably that's the first legit song.
Yeah,
I would say. I still remember how it goes.
Yeah. It's funny how we remember those things, isn't it?
Yeah.
We want to forget them, but we just can't.
Well, it did have a certain thing to it. You know, it actually was a pretty cool song. Mm-hmm. In, well, at least in my mind, that's how I remember it. It might not have been a cool song at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I suggested to another songwriter, I said, you know, maybe we need to put out an album of all songwriters' first songs that they wrote, just to kind of see how they've progressed as songwriters over time. That would be kind of a cool album, I think.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that you'd actually probably find a lot of, you know, rough gems in there.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think there would be some, I mean, lyrically, I think it would be a really interesting exploration of how a person matures, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you come from a musical family. Have you always done music, or did you work another job or go to school for something else?
So my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was a semi-famous cornet player back in the day. And my mother, her brother, and her sister are all exceptional musicians. My father, he went to the Eastman School of Music. He was a trombone player and played in our state symphony orchestra. I did marching band, and jazz ensemble through sixth grade through 12th grade. Only classes I ever got straight A's in. So, didn't do very well in anything else, but I did great in all of those classes. And, you know, actually I ruined my mom's maple coffee table with spoons playing drums when I was probably 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And then she bought me a little drum pad thing. And we always had a piano and an acoustic guitar. And I remember, I think it was my stepbrother, who was much older, came to the house and he played Smoke on the Water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he left, and I went right over to the piano and picked it out, and then I picked up the classical guitar and picked it out, and it just went from there. And it's been, you know, my dad, he called music the affliction, because he was like, if you're not playing it, you're writing it, or you're thinking about it, or you're practicing it, you know. And he's like, you gotta kind of be careful to keep your life in order and don't just lose yourself in music. But that being said, I mean, it's what I've done as my sole profession for the last 24 years, I think. But actually, I went to culinary school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I cooked all the way through high school and for a few years after. And then I met my wife and I went to culinary school, and I graduated culinary school and interned at a pastry shop. I was this woman's pastry assistant. And so I was making those enormous 5, 6, 7 tiered wedding cakes, a couple of those for every weekend. And yeah, wedding cakes and cakes and pastry. I still do some of it today.
Really?
So I love it.
Did you do the cake for your own wedding?
I did not. The woman whose restaurant I worked at did our cake. But yeah, I've done a lot of wedding cakes for friends and graduation cakes, and it's another very creative outlet, you know? Right. It's just very natural for me.
Cooks are very passionate people as well, and so both those professions are extremely passionate and dedication, you know? You're always learning about, in cooking, you're learning about new types of ways to cook things and the ingredients and that you can use, and so I'm always fascinated by chefs as well, because they seem to be, I don't know, music and food just seem to kind of go together in some ways in the way it's created, you know?
You're very right. And I think to your point about the passion part of it is spot on. And people who cook, they're pretty, for the most part, they're lifers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with music. It's like, if you're a musician, even if it's not your full-time gig, I mean, you kind of are or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with cooking, and it's the same thing with music. I think those are really good parallels to draw.
Mm-hmm. So why did you choose music over cooking?
So I didn't choose music. I think it just chose me. It never occurred to me to do anything else. Cooking was so I could make money and buy guitars and buy amps and stuff. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, you know, always in a band and playing the entire time. And even after I graduated high school, all of my friends, everybody went to college. It didn't even occur to me. I didn't want to do it. It wasn't I was like, I just want to get the band on the road. I just want to play. And, you know, as much as I love cooking, it was just a means so that I could buy more gear and play. You know, I was working at this place and, you know, I went to the owner. I was, you know, such a gearhead when I was younger that, you know, I went to the owner. I'm like, can you give me an advance on my paycheck so that I could get this processor so I could use it Friday night at the gig, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Are you a trained musician? I mean, be playing in high school and that you must know how to read music and stuff. Have you also studied theory and that sort of thing as well?
Yep. I've, you know, of course I can read music. I was, you know, always only had to really read treble clef, but I've recently started taking cello lessons. So that was like a nightmare for me to have to learn to read bass clef. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, oh, but, I took my dad's theory books from when he went to Eastman and he taught me a little bit of theory. And then I went through his books and, you know, learned some more theory. And then I started studying basically, you know, the classics, Debussy, Paganini, Bach, Mozart. And I learned, I don't know where I stumbled across this. I think it was when I was playing a lot of Mozart, because I had a book that had transcribed all of the main violin lines into the guitar scale. And I stumbled on this thing, you know, get a little technical for a second, called the harmonized chord scale.
Mm-hmm.
And almost pretty much, you know, 90% of all the hits ever written are in a harmonized chord scale. And so once I discovered that, it just really opened up all of the doors, like a light bulb went off my head, whatever. So I realized that if we're in this key, then it dictates that it's got to be this chord or variation upon whatever chord. So I could come up with a melody and then start swapping out different chords, but not change the melody. And so that's where the theory is, you know, it's not just handy. It's absolutely where it's at.
Right. A lot of people, they write theory and they don't even know they're writing it.
That is very true. But for me, learning, you know, especially when I work with and for other artists, they can come to me with a song that has a killer melody, but maybe the chord progression is a little bit pedestrian. You've
mm-hmm.
heard it.
Mm-hmm.
In learning theory, then I can say, oh, you know, it goes to this chord. We can just slip this chord underneath it with an addition, and it'll really open things up.
Right.
So, yeah, learning theory, harmony, and actual technique. Because at one point I was really limited by my technique on playing specifically guitar and bass. And I kind of had to go back and relearn some things because I could hear things in my head and I couldn't play them. And that was very frustrating.
Yeah, and learning theory will help with expanding that technique too.
It kind of dictates it basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So how many instruments can you play?
Well, so drums, guitar, bass, piano, mandolin, learning cello. I wouldn't say I can play it well yet. Anything. I mean, I've picked up, you know, dulcimers, you know, dobros, Hamel dulcimers, you know, anything in the percussion section, timpani, bells, xylophone, all of that kind of stuff.
And were you playing trumpet in school or what were you playing in band?
No, I was in the percussion section.
Okay.
So, you know, it would be either playing snare drum or timpani or vibes. And I played full drum set in jazz ensemble. But some semesters I would play bass in jazz ensemble. Sometimes I would play guitar for a semester in jazz ensemble. It was really nice. We had an incredible music teacher. You know, it's funny. He's my parents, super musical and very, very supportive. My dad drove me once a week. He drove me an hour each way to a drum lesson for years. And he would like wander around a mall while I was taking a drum lesson. Our band teacher was the exact same way, super, super supportive and just let me play anything. And he would write me notes so I could get out of study hall and go to the band room and jam mm-hmm. and stuff like that, you know? So yeah, I mean, anything in the percussion realm, but then most things that are string, I can pick up pretty quickly as well.
So did you ever try to play any of the instruments that your parents played, like the trumpet?
So I started playing saxophone, tenor saxophone, for a little while when I was in band in high school. Yeah, I got the hang of that fairly quickly, but I did realize I'm like, I've got to, you know, really dedicate time to something, and I probably shouldn't be adding another instrument in. So I just kind of, you know, I dropped that. Yeah. I tried to play the trombone, and it was horrible. But I think trombone is either it's really good or it's not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't feel like any intimidation from your parents as far as learning how to play?
No, they just encouraged me to play anything and everything.
That's good.
You know, my uncle was an incredible flugelhorn player. My aunt, you know, an amazing trumpet player. My mom, flute and piano. She actually sold her flute to buy me a drum set. She pawned it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, so my parents were incredibly supportive.
They were professional musicians. I mean, were they making a living as musicians? So you kind of saw that lifestyle?
My mom didn't, but my uncle did, and my aunt did for a while. And my dad, he did part-time mm-hmm. when he was younger. He had a jazz band that he played in, and they would tour during, I think, the summer season or something like this. And then he always played in our state symphony. He was the lead trombone player.
So now that you know, you're out there playing yourself, do you have a band that you take with you when you do your shows, or are you playing mostly as a duo, or what's your setup?
Well, so my setup it's probably not really conventional. I'm not really playing on the road anymore. My last couple of years, I play out every now and then. My last, like, 4 or 5 years ago, I was doing 80 or 90 nights a year with the band that I was in. And before that, I'd done up to, you know, 130 something nights a year on the road. And, you know, honestly, after a couple decades, I like my wife and I like my house. And I just, you know, I got burnt out on it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now I'm just doing pretty much all studio work for myself and anybody else who needs, you know, what I do. And I'm just doing everything, you know, online and everything digital, and just embracing what's going on today, because, you know, the internet technology, mm-hmm. it's awesome.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's how we all get to do our things now. So, yeah, so I'm not doing the band thing at all.
You mentioned you're working on other things right now. So what else are you hoping to get out this year?
So I have another project, another EP, 4 songs that I've done with a very well-established artist who I'm not going to say her name right now, because I'm going to save that for the release next month. But she's an amazing vocalist, and she has a very robust career on her own. So really psyched that she sang this EP for me. It's going to be more on the acoustic, folkier side of things than this album was going to be. There's only one song that's, you know, like full band, electric, you know, drums and everything going on. So it's a little bit of a departure.
Very cool. That sounds awesome. That's right in my wheelhouse. I love folk rock, so...
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a little dark. Mm-hmm. It's a little dark acoustic stuff, yeah.
That shows you're going in a new direction then.
You know, I just kind of, it's funny, I don't know, I just go wherever it leads me.
So here's my, you know who James Lipton is?
I do.
Okay, here's my James Lipton question for you. So if this takes you a moment to answer, that's okay. What is your favorite song by somebody else and why?
Okay, that's going to take me a while to answer. My favorite song by somebody else and why? I mean, there are, the favorite is the hard word, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that really makes it hard.
It could be a song that you wish you wrote, maybe.
So I'm going to super, super, super date myself here. The record that made me want to play guitar was Led Zeppelin's Live, The Song Remains the Same. Mm-hmm. It was Jimmy Page is what made me want to play guitar. And that live album is just so full of energy, and it's almost a train wreck. It's just about to go off the rails. And it was that that really made me want to play guitar. And I guess the song that really, you know, honestly, I can listen to it sometimes. I'm man enough to say that I actually cry listening to it sometimes, is the live version of Since I've Been Loving You. It's Robert Plant's vocal is just, I mean, it's Robert Plant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and live, it really touches me. Mm-hmm. It really touches me.
Yeah, there's a certain energy they had as a live band that I don't think anybody ever touched.
Oh, live, they were just, it was out of control. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was literally out of control. But if you talk musicians, it was, you know, everybody thinks, you know, Page and Plant, the guys holding that band down was John Paul Jones and John Bonham.
Exactly, yeah.
They kept that thing from going off the rails, you know?
Mm-hmm,
and,
yeah.
You know, John Bonham, I was playing along to Zeppelin records and trying to play Moby Dick note for note when I played drums. Not that that was ever really going to happen.
I was going to say, that sounds like an impossible
Yeah, it was pretty goal. Impossible. But, you know, I was trying.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying. Yep.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for talking with us on KC Cafe Radio today. The new EP is called Cat's Meow, and it's called CJ Teffner. You can find it on CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon, all those normal places. And then your website, tell people where they can find you and find out more about you.
So for the time being, while my website's being built, I'm using my Facebook page, and it's CJ Teffner, musician/producer.
Look for him there on Facebook, and are you on Twitter and all that stuff too?
I'm on Twitter, and it's at CJ Teffner, and Instagram is at CJ Teffner as well, TEFFNER.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much again. Look up Cat's Meow on CD Baby and iTunes and all those, and listen to his music. It's great stuff, and requested on KC Cafe Radio as well.
Absolutely. It's the home of love is KC.
Thank you. Thank you again, Chris. CJ Teffner,
thank you so
everybody.
Much, Kathy. Thank you.